Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. We are joined by one of the most talented project managers, innovative product developers, team managers, and supportive individuals the world has seen. With over 12 years experience designing, developing, and implementing software projects from a high level, his vast knowledge and creativity to develop roadmaps to revenue for companies, helping them save time, money, and eliminating frustrations is one of his unique skill sets. With a focus on the future, Corey Engel looks to add incredible value to the world through his new startup venture called CapTel, a capital relationship platform. Join us as we understand more about Corey, his founder's odyssey, and what value he will share during this episode to educate, inspire, and support you on your journey. Welcome, Corey, today for joining. What's going on?
Thank you, Nathan. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So let's just get into it. I'd like to understand how you began your career in technology and what continues to interest you in the industry today.
Well, like a lot of entrepreneurs out there, I started my journey figuring out where I fit in the market. So that was the first thing I did. So I worked a lot of jobs, right? And so right out of high school, I did 1 year of college and then I dropped out because I wanted to learn. I was obsessed with learning and I was obsessed with figuring out how things worked and operated, what inspired and motivated people. And I wanted to figure out what I could do to contribute and be part of that. And everything I did, every idea I had, I was always told that it takes 5 to 10 years, 15 years to solve that or to learn how to master that, right? And so my goal was, hey, how can I expedite that process? And so I got into business working with a bunch of different platforms and startups and small businesses, solving any problems I could as fast as I could. And I found that with technology and software, I could easily put systems together to speed up that process. And so I could provide instant value and instant alignment with those businesses because I was providing quick value and efficiencies. And so that's where I got started. That's where that kind of cracked the egg open and found out, hey, I think software is my thing. I think developing projects is my thing. But I had always been an evangelist, someone who talks to people, who wants to know more about the world around them. And so I just started talking to people. I joined LinkedIn early in 2010, 2011, and just began telling my story and finding people who are working on cool things and interviewing them. And when I asked them what problems they were facing or what they were trying to figure out, a lot of these people at really big companies said, we can't solve XYZ problem. We have no idea, you know, how to solve it, or this is what I'm working on. And so then I would go out and research that, and I would use the internet to figure out how to solve it with software, and I'd propose it to them. And if they bit off that and then said, hey, we want to bring you in and talk about more about that, I would go in and start advising with these companies. And so
let's talk a little bit more about the relational process that you like to use, because every founder and individual, right, is going to come across times in their life where they need to build solid relationships. It's not just transactional, it is relational. And I'd like for you to expand a little bit more on how you reach out to people. What typically do you say And what are the questions you ask them in order to find their problems?
Yeah, in the beginning, I started by simply, you know, sliding into people's DMs. I realize now in hindsight how invasive that probably was. But just asking questions and learning. And as I would learn new things, I would find ways to ask the question that led me to that thing I learned to new people in new industries to see if it applied. So if I was in the cosmetic space and working with, like I worked with Sally Beauty, and they were dealing with a certain supply chain issue, once we kind of baked out a solution, I would take the same questions that were asked to bring us to that solution, and I would go to other industry leaders that were outside of the cosmetic space and ask, hey, are you guys facing these problems too? And in the most times, 8 out of 10, they were experiencing similar issues. And so it was kind of cool. This investigation was on LinkedIn, started with DMs, and then it grew into this this form where I was posting questions or things that would create conversations, because then I could figure out who was on that right track, who was already asking those questions. And then I'd approach them and say, hey, I saw your comment on my post, love what you had to say. I was curious about XYZ question. And now we were on our way to building the value and the relationship, right? And then from there, I wasn't always the solution. And so that was a big, big turning point for me, is when I could say, here's the need for the solution, and then introduce somebody else and say, hey, it's not me who's going to do fulfillment. I just want to provide that value and to make sure that you have no bottlenecks or issues that you're facing. And I kind of cleared the path. Well, the more I did that, people would circle around even years later and say, hey, what are you up to now? I remember we were working on that one problem and we got it solved, and I actually switched companies, or I left the company I was with and I got funded. Now I'm a startup. What can you do to help me? And now, like, because of the constant value and kind of open-handedness, I didn't have to do much PR. I didn't have to do much marketing. So there is a growing list of people who are like coming back to me saying, can we work with you? Can we hire you? Would you want this position at our company? Or would you like to do this as a service? And that I was kind of fortunate from that regard to go through that.
Yeah. So, you know, that is a great thing, Corey. And I've seen that from you many times now, just following you and what you're doing on LinkedIn and the way that you truly and genuinely connect with people. You know, I truly believe, and this is a quote from a friend of mine, Joe Polish from the Genius Network, life gives to the giver. And it's truly, you are a true testimony of that, allowing for people, you know, to truly give back to you because you've given so much. You know, so if that's one lesson that people take away from this podcast today, is as a founder, it's not always about what you can get, but it truly is about what you can give. And Corey is a wonderful example of that. So Corey, let's talk about, when you look at problems, what do you see? You know, and what is your way of creating a templatized process almost to identify those specific problems? I mean, this is a broad question, but problems exist, so there's typically a way to address those. I'm curious on how you do that.
Yeah. There's a lot of tests out there as far as personality and strengths go. I used Clifton Strengths. We've talked about that before. But one of the strengths that they help highlight that has helped me explain that process that I follow is connectedness. And so in my mind, everything in the world is connected and correlated in some way, shape, or form, right? Like, so if you're dealing with pharmaceutical research, or you're dealing with agricultural development, or you're working on supply chain, or you're in politics, you're going to be interwoven with all industries at some point or another. It's how it is. So like, right, any industry can tie back to real estate. Real estate deal can tie back to energy provisioning, right? So if there's no water or resources, there's no real estate project, right? And so all the sectors are interwoven. And so understanding that connectedness has helped me when I'm presented with a problem. A lot of times the best way to approach it is by first looking if there's a solution for the same problem in another industry, because maybe you're not finding the solution because you don't have the right verbiage or the right framework to explain what's actually happening. But another industry might have already solved that. So if you look at old industries, travel, oil and gas, right? And we've been through a lot of that, where some of your experience in the industrial supply space has helped with understand baking in and building out software, because it's supply chain, right? You still have to bring together the resources. How much are you going to invent? What IP are you going to bring to the table? And what are you going to use out of the box? And so when you're problem solving, the more you kind of connect this map that all industries are interwoven or connected in some way, shape, or form, a lot of times the solutions to those problems can just jump off the pages. It's just like, hey, this is how the logistics space is solving it. This is how, you know, the energy sector is solving that problem. And so that's a good starting point. And then from there, there's no way to shortcut the learning side of things. You have to go out and learn. And I always, if I can put this advice out there, I'm by no means the most successful person. You know, I've got a long way to go, a lot to learn. But one thing that I did do is I realized that I was telling myself that I was bad at reading. I used to always tell myself that I'm more of an auditory learner, right? And so what I did is I said, no, I am a learner, period, right? And so if there's something that has to be read, I'm going to stare at it until my eyes bleed out, and I'm going to read that thing, right? And I'm going to ask people who are experts in visual learning to help train me and how to prepare, like how I read, or if I'm ADHD. And so like my eyes go dart all over the place. And so how do I focus when I'm reading content? How do I digest it or put it into play, right? Or how do I save a piece of that information for later, right? But I have to learn it. There's no shortcut for that.
That and leads so me
that
to
was
another,
also a huge breakthrough.
Yeah. That leads me to another question for you is, as a founder, you and I both know that you're constantly sharpening your tool, right? Which would be your brain, right? Your connections, all these things. Well, what is one way that you've taken an initiative to understand yourself better and to become just a better Corey, right? And you know, this could be true with some of the other people out there who are looking for ways to better themselves. So this could be an inspiration, Corey. So, you know, feel free to share what you're going through and how you've gotten to the point where you have.
Yeah, so this might be sort of a hard pill to swallow for some people. But one thing that I've seen, because I'm on the data side, because I'm on the technology side, is there is a lot of programming that takes place within software platforms to increase engagement, to increase conversions, to increase, there's all these results that they're trying to get. And right now the tech sector is very focused on engagement with people, right? And so if that's true, then in the very entertainment platforms that we use, you have to assume that those are also baked in. And so I didn't really recognize this early on, but I would go at the end of the day, turn on Netflix, watch a show, binge watch something, you know, I'd turn on some YouTube and watch some videos. And I always told myself I was being super productive because I was catching up with the latest show. It allowed me to build relationships with other people because I could be like, oh yeah, I totally saw that episode. Or, oh, did you hear this video or whatever? And I wasn't spending time in an atmosphere where I was learning, or I was rebuilding my health and my mental wellness, right? I was caught in this middle space where I thought I was building my knowledge, but I really wasn't, right? And so one of the big breakthroughs that I had was turning a lot of that off. And I've been able to turn some stuff back on, and especially when it comes to learning, I still watch YouTube, I still listen to podcasts, anything to absorb knowledge and information. But I've learned to turn stuff off and focus on building my health, having those moments where there's silence, going out and staying fit and doing like health activities and making sure I'm active, right? And so all those things have helped me tremendously.
You know, I think that's extremely important. And, you know, you've got to be the best version of yourself for the other people in your life, right? Your family, your friends, and the businesses and people that you're constantly serving, right? And even to that, it'll help you be more creative because your mind will be free flowing. You'll be able to function at a higher level in that way. So, you know, so it becomes a better you, right? So let's look at how it's been able to shape you to the person that you've been today, to then being able to lead others in a team dynamic or in a team setting. So let's talk about the teams that you have led and what is your leadership style and what ways do you like to communicate with people when you're going through a development project or any project for that matter?
Yeah. So as for when it comes to leadership, there's so many better leaders than me, obviously. So what normally tends to happen is if the problem they're trying to solve or the issue you're trying to resolve is simple, the easier it is for you to sit on top and to delegate. But the more simple there is, the more simplicity there is, and the more there's systems baked into how you're going to develop the solution or how you're going to approach a problem, the easier it is for you to sit up top and delegate. And I've actually found it's much more fun and challenging, and I feel more alive when I actually face really complex problems and have to be in the trenches. And so I know a lot of people are obsessed with this idea of passive income, and I love passive income. It's a good goal to aim for, but I love the journey. I love the difficulty of being in the trenches and being part of building the system and watching it break and then having to refix it and then break and then refix it, right? And then hiring people and they hate you and you're like, oh man, like let's keep going. Let's keep trying to build, you know, and then recognizing flaws within myself. And so my leadership skill or style is very much of an open-handed, let's learn together, let's build together, and approach me if you need issues resolved or if you want more information. Otherwise, I mean, we can Google things together. We can experience it together. You know, it's more of a collaborative type role.
That's a wonderful leadership style. That's a wonderful leadership style. I would 100% agree with you. Let's talk about how, as an entrepreneur, somebody is looking to start a company. They've got an idea. They don't know where exactly to go. And through your experience of just consulting with so many different businesses, individuals, I'm sure you get pitched ideas all the time, and you're a bit of an idea generator yourself. So how do you really flesh out the bad ideas and then the good ideas? And then if you were talking to a founder right now, which we are, and tell them what they should do and the steps that they should take on that idea.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's kind of multiple angles to approach that. First, it depends on where your funding is going to come from to bake the concept into play. So if you're a high ideator because you're high in learning and you've got a tremendous amount of knowledge, so you can see holes and gaps in virtually every industry. There's no stone unturned for you. There's no way you can't build value, right? And you have to focus and pick one vertical and say, okay, here's where I'm going to hit right now, raise the money or bootstrap, we're going to get to market, and then we're going to release a product or service, and there's where it's going to revolve, and you're building this roadmap, right? If you're funding, if you're limited on funding, then your job is to jump ahead to whoever your biggest buyer is going to be. So if you can find an industry leader or somebody who's the biggest fish in the room, who can write the biggest check as a user, that's going to help you front load a lot of that revenue and provide you with scalable profit that you can use to reinvest back in your company. If you land an agreement with that company, even if they don't relinquish all the funds up front for that revenue, that's something that's highly investable that you can go take to investors, whether they're angels or VCs or private equity firms. And so finding ways to find big fish and present them with solutions that you can solve along the way of getting where your product, maybe your B2C or maybe your direct to consumer, you're drop shipping a product, but there's this other angle that you can hit where you're providing a value for someone bigger than you who can pay a higher marginal price. That helps you to kind of bootstrap and accelerate your production. So
that would be a market validation pretty much, right? Because if you can get a customer to validate the product and then you can get an LOI and then you close that, right? Just like what you're saying, then as a founder, you've almost, you know, you now have a customer and that customer can share with their friends, right? So that's an interesting take. I know I've noticed, and I respect the fact that you're able to do that in many circumstances with service-based and product-based companies. So tell us a little bit more about that theory that you have and how you've been able to get in front of the largest fish.
Yeah. So that's sort of it. So that's, again, that goes back to LinkedIn. That's where if the more you provide value and explaining solutions or asking the right questions to people, the more accessibility you have to those relationships. And so when it's time to circle back around, I would say if you're contemplating starting a startup right now, jump on LinkedIn and start reading post after post, absorb in networks, look for VPs, look for executives, look for, you know, connect with people in your industry who are thought leaders in that industry. And then start building laterally. Look at their comment section and who's engaging with them, because they're going to be leaders in lateral industries or industries that are parallel with that subject matter expert. Once you start building a network and you can start absorbing in what the problems are, it's a lot easier to look for keywords or for, you know, these little rabbit trails of value where someone's like, hey, I have this ultra niche industry where I'm doing, you know, factoring for the medical space, you know, for case settlements, right? And there's this like little string, like, but I'm doing $5.5 million a year in 2 years of being in business. You're like, ooh, that's a working model. And you're like, can I do factoring for the incident space for insurance claims on automotive incidents? And then you're like, okay, is there anybody doing that? And you can look for these little trails where you can mirror and learn as you grow, and then use that funding to then launch new products into the market. And so that's where my starting point.
That's great. Talk to me a little bit more about what excites you, like I said, about the industry of technology and some of the passions that you've developed, but also some of the projects that you're working on right now that you're excited about. You've got the floor.
Yeah. So what I'm most excited about is I've been on this long-term journey to connect funders and founders with the right infrastructure, the right piping to source capital. So as you said in the beginning, in the intro, I have a capital relationship platform that I'm bringing to market. The biggest problem that I've seen time again for founders and for startup ideators, people who are producing a concept, is there's a separation between product and service offerings that are ideas or concepts that sound great and ideas and concepts that there are like, hey, a big fish is willing to invest in this. A big fish is willing to buy license agreements for this, or it solves a huge immediate need, right? When you see those big needs, and if you're in the other category, if you're trying to prove a thesis or you're trying to pressure test an idea, that's fine, but bake in features and functions that will also service this immediate need if you want to get to funding. So what's exciting me the most is that a lot of times founders approach the product and service development first, and they spend all this time and resources baking that together. And then their goal is to go hit the market, right? Because they think they're ready and they're going to get some beta users. And at that point, usually there's this eye-opening moment where they're like, I'm so short funded. Like, we raised $500,000. We need 2 million. We raised 2 million. We need 20 million, you know, or we're going to hit this giant market segment and there's so much demand. we're never going to be able to catch up. At that moment, all founders immediately go to this zone where they're just hitting their whole network. They're begging anyone and everyone for capital, whatever terms they can give away. And instead, if they kind of swam opposite of that, that intention and looked for ways to hit or receive capital in a non-equity standpoint, whether it's through venture debt or short-term loans, or whether it's through revenue, those LOIs that we talked about, and converting those documents, or working with municipalities to drive, taxable income for that municipality, right? There's dozens of ways to raise capital that are non-equity based, and it's a lot to manage. It's a lot to learn for a founder. And so that's what my goal is for Capital. What I'm most excited about is that capital that's allocated for ventures, like money that's supposed to be used for venture use to solve a real problem in the market, can come from virtually anywhere. And a great example I like to give is like, if I asked you to go get soap right now, if we treat capital or money as a commodity, and I'd tell you to, hey, go get soap, your first thing wouldn't be to go like, oh, I'm going to only go to the soap manufacturer and I'm only going to buy that soap, right? You're going to hit Amazon, you're going to hit Target, you're going to shop around, you're going to go online, you're going to talk to friends and family, you're going to go to some natural distributor who's local, who's got some MLM or network marketing company, right? Like, you can get soap from virtually anywhere. And this capital should be treated the same. Like, you don't have to go direct to these high term VC groups. You can go virtually anywhere and talk to people and build relationships and find ways to provide value in exchange for the capital to support your growth of your venture. And so that's exciting to me right now.
I can tell you love talking about that. And I want to get your perspective on what crowdfunding is, to you. And if there's a way that you can incorporate a crowdfunding type software or technology into the now thoughts that you've created with your startup.
Yeah. So crowdfunding is kind of one of those misnomers. So there's like the legal sense, you have regulation crowdfunding, and then you have the idea or concept of aggregating funds. And so if your goal is to aggregate funds for the investment into your startup, and you're going to crowdfund that, there's platforms to facilitate the raise of capital. Obviously, they're sort of restricted because of SEC regulations. And so you got to be careful with the way you go about doing that. But there's also small funds that have been around for decades called SPVs. And SPVs are like micro, if you know what a venture capital firm is, it has a GP as a head, and then it has LPs, limited partners, who invest money that the GP can invest into startups. Well, an SPV runs the exact same way, except for it only is built and constructed to invest in one singular startup. And so they're cheaper to run and operate and stand up. They're easier. A lot of times VCs will have SPV arms where they can stand one up for you, raise from their angel network, and then have those funds allocated laterally alongside the VC. If there's not a thesis match, or if, you know, they don't, maybe they've maxed out their funds for that moment. And so crowdfunding is, again, something that could be fractured into a bunch of different silos of how you go about raising from a crowd. As far as regulation crowdfunding goes, I think that there are a couple of platforms that do it well. Where Capital kind of incorporates that in is that right now there's not really a place where you can send out a link to a profile like you would, like a Kickstarter profile, to have any funder type then invest on their terms, their vehicle, their, you know, capital flow. So so they're sort of limited on what type of capital you can facilitate when you're crowdfunding, if that makes sense. So
absolutely. Well, I mean, I think if anyone out there obviously has more questions, then this gentleman here, Corey, is on LinkedIn, and I'm sure he would be, you know, more than willing to answer questions if you guys direct messaged him or added him. But, you know, Corey, it's been a great time here talking more and more. Now, I want to ask, you know, let's just in closing, just to make one thing here known is, how will you take your next steps forward with this company that you're building, and what are your action steps forward?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I spent so many years building these relationships to help pair with solutions that I was building and developing, that when it came time to build my own solution, I was so focused on solving the problem that I forgot to build with people. And so it's been about 2 years of building development, doing all the research and involved with that, and making sure I baked out a solid solution with a solid PMF. And so next steps are to continually grow my people infrastructure and to bring in partners and VPs and people who would like to participate in the growth of that platform. I have good funding and I have good infrastructure now coming in. But the P, it ties back to the people, is one of the most instrumental parts of releasing a product, a solid product to the market. And so that's my journey in the next 3 to 6 months, is to aggregate as many people as I can into the organization so we can grow and scale.
So in closing here, let's do this. Let's talk to that founder out there who needs a little bit of inspiration. You know, you've provided a few very key nuggets during this conversation in regards to, you know, crowdfunding, funding in general, you know, understanding problems and how to identify them. We went over that. But now let's talk a little bit about inspiration, because you have a personal story, and I'd like for you to speak to that person about, you know, just if they're going through a tough time, if, you know, their company's not working out how they think it should, or, you know, what would you say to that person?
Yeah. So like a lot of founders, this isn't my first rodeo. Startups have come and gone. And so if you're in a point where you're reaching adversity within your startup, things are outside your control, and there's outside influence that's crippling you, or you feel like you're stuck in a box where you can't get out. First is I always encourage people to focus on mental health. Do not let go of your mental and physical health for any reason whatsoever. Even if it means like just breaking the way your mind thinks, stopping right there and just walking for like a day or two, like just give yourself the ability to focus on your mental and physical health first and foremost. That's been part of my journey time and time again with different startups that we've achieved funding for, that we've got acquired, that we've been projects I've been a part of internally with big companies, is that there's moments where if you can walk away and focus on your mental and physical health and then come back, a lot of times the solution's there waiting for you. And it's really kind of cool to see that transition, that you're like, hey, I don't have to solve everything. I don't have to be the one who champions this project. It could be something that the timing was wrong, or the world wasn't ready or whatever, and that's okay. And so that's the first thing. Second part, and I think it's kind of a capstone on top of that, but don't stop learning. Do not stop learning. Whatever you do, do not stop learning. Do not think, I'm a master at my craft, I'm the best in understanding medical factoring, or I'm the best at understanding, you know, patent distribution or whatever it is. Learn something else. Learn something laterally. Learn something that will help you learn the technical, the legal, the tax, that, you know, learn it and be obsessed with that portion, because what happens is it allows you to invite people into your life who know more than you in that and can humble you, but then also can help you get to where you need to go, and you can ask the right questions and hire the right people the more you know. So,
well, thank you, Corey, for just your wealth of knowledge and the wisdom that you've been able to pour to our audience. You know, we're excited to see you grow and, you know, your ventures and also your relationships. You know, we're excited for that. And, you know, in addition, I would like to add one thing to you guys out there, is never stop. You know, and that was something that I have learned, you know, through my experience in sports and teams and business, building businesses. Never stop, always be in the game. and continue to learn. I love what Corey had just said, because the more you learn, the more momentum you're going to have. And listen, you cannot steer a parked car, you know, and you've got to just keep going. Sometimes you may have to have one, two, or three projects going until you hit on one. And then when you hit, you go all in. So, you know, we're excited for that. And once again, we're thankful for you guys joining us today on the Founders Odyssey podcast. Join us for the next episode. We'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we inspire, educate, and support you on your Founders Odyssey.